Hello and welcome back to Surgery 101, the app and podcast brought to you with the help of the Department of Surgery at the University of Alberta. You can get the app for your phone either on the App Store or at the Android Marketplace, and you can also subscribe to Surgery 101 Notes at surgery101.org. In this week's episode, we'll be hearing from a new Surgery 101 expert. This is Dr. Simon Turner, who's a PGY3 resident in general surgery. And he'll be telling us everything that a medical student needs to know about the diagnosis and treatment of pneumothorax. First of all, he'll be defining it and considering where the air comes from in a pneumothorax. Secondly, he'll be looking at the different classifications of pneumothorax, considering classification by the cause and classification by physiological effect. And then lastly, he'll be talking about how we treat a pneumothorax and describing how a chest tube is inserted. This is an episode I've been looking forward to for quite some time because we get a lot of requests for an episode on pneumothorax and chest tubes. So, let's get ready to puncture the lung here on Surgery 101.
Pneumothorax is one of the most commonly encountered clinical problems in trauma surgery and in thoracic surgery. Therefore, it is important to have an understanding of the basic pathophysiology of this disease and how to classify it based on that pathophysiology. Because pneumothorax can be a life-threatening emergency, surgeons must have an approach to diagnosing the different types of pneumothorax and the treatment of each type. Simply put, a pneumothorax is the presence of air within the pleural space. In the normal state, the pleural space is a potential space between the parietal pleura, which lines the inside of the chest wall, and the visceral pleura, which lines the outside of the lung. This potential space is filled only with a small volume of pleural fluid. The lack of air within this space is what allows the lung to stick to the chest wall and is a major factor in keeping the lung expanded at all times. If air is somehow allowed to enter this space, the lung is able to collapse, either partially or completely. This presence of air outside the lung, along with the resulting collapse of the lung, is called a pneumothorax. For air to be present within the pleural space, it must have come from somewhere. By far the most common source of air in the pneumothorax is from a lung which is leaking air for some reason. Other less common sources of air are from an injured esophagus or trachea, or from the atmosphere by an injury to the chest wall. This brings us to the classification of pneumothoraces. Pneumothoraces can be classified in two ways. First, a pneumothorax can be classified according to its cause. Or, alternatively, a pneumothorax can also be classified according to its effect on physiology. Classifying a pneumothorax according to its cause is fairly straightforward. A pneumothorax can be spontaneous, traumatic, or iatrogenic. A spontaneous pneumothorax is one that occurs without any history of trauma or injury. These spontaneous pneumothoraces can either occur in patients with healthy lungs or as a result of some underlying lung disease. When it occurs in patients without underlying lung disease, we call it a primary spontaneous pneumothorax. These patients are typically young males who have a tall and skinny build, who for some reason are predisposed to weak spots in the apices of the lung. Secondary spontaneous pneumothorax, on the other hand, occurs in patients with underlying lung diseases, such as COPD or lung cancer. In either case, a hole develops in the lung that allows air to escape, resulting in a pneumothorax. A more common kind of pneumothorax is a traumatic pneumothorax. These can result from either blunt or penetrating trauma to the chest. The trauma results in an injury to the lung, or less commonly to the chest wall, esophagus, or proximal airway, allowing air to enter the pleural space. Similarly, doctors may cause an iatrogenic pneumothorax, either as a routine part of surgery within the chest or as a complication of endoscopy or other surgery. In addition to classifying a pneumothorax by its cause, it is also important to describe a pneumothorax in terms of its effects on a patient. In this respect, there are three main types of pneumothorax. The first is a simple pneumothorax, in which there is partial or complete collapse of the lung, but no other adverse changes. The pleural space contains air, but not so much as to cause increased pressure within the chest. As a result, the signs and symptoms of a simple pneumothorax can be relatively mild. The patient may complain of some shortness of breath. They may also experience chest, back, or shoulder pain on the affected side. History may also reveal clues to the cause of the pneumothorax, including preceding history of coughing or underlying lung disease in a spontaneous pneumothorax, or a history of trauma or previous medical procedure. Physical examination may reveal signs of respiratory distress, such as hypoxia and increased respiratory rate, but usually only in severe cases. Often the patient may be breathing comfortably, and the only clues on examination are decreased air entry and resonance to percussion on the affected side. A PA chest x-ray confirms a diagnosis with the presence of air outside the lung, usually found at the apex or along the lateral chest wall. The treatment for a simple pneumothorax is the insertion of a chest tube, which we will discuss in a minute, and these are usually not immediately life-threatening. In contrast, there is a much less common but much more dangerous condition known as a tension pneumothorax. In this condition, air leaks into the pleural space via a hole in the lung consisting of a flap valve type mechanism. When the patient takes a breath in, the negative pressure in the chest allows the hole to open and air rushes into the pleural space. When the patient breathes out, the positive pressure in the chest closes the hole, meaning air cannot escape back out the way that it just came in. In this fashion, with each breath, more and more air enters the pleural space and is trapped there. This causes the pressure within the affected side of the chest to rise to dangerous levels. The pressure rises so high that it pushes the mediastinum towards the other side of the chest and can, in effect, kink off the great vessels in the chest. This results in profound findings on physical examination. In addition to the findings associated with a simple pneumothorax, these patients are often tachypneic and hypoxic. As the tension increases in their chest, blood return to the heart and cardiac output is decreased, resulting in hypotension, tachycardia, and shock. The trachea is seen to deviate away from the affected side, and the veins of the neck become distended, both reflecting the dangerously high pressure within the chest. Untreated, a tension pneumothorax is rapidly fatal. The urgency with which a tension pneumothorax must be diagnosed and treated has given rise to the common saying, "You should never diagnose a tension pneumothorax on an x-ray." That is to say, the diagnosis of a tension pneumothorax must be based entirely on clinical features alone, and treatment must be initiated immediately, without waiting to obtain confirmatory imaging. The treatment for a tension pneumothorax is an emergent needle decompression, which involves inserting a 14-gauge needle into the second intercostal space in the midclavicular line, just above the third rib, to immediately relieve the high pressure. Often a loud hiss is heard as the air rushes out of the chest. This must always be followed by the insertion of a chest tube. The third and least common form of pneumothorax is an open or sucking pneumothorax, in which trauma to the chest creates a defect in the chest wall large enough to allow air to enter the chest directly with each inspiration. This is treated with a special kind of dressing and the insertion of a chest tube through a separate incision. Inserting a chest tube is a vital skill for all surgeons, especially those dealing with trauma patients, and can be a life-saving maneuver. The procedure begins with the proper positioning of the patient, on their back, with the ipsilateral arm extended and abducted as far as possible. When possible, sedation should be administered. The chest is then widely prepped with sterile solution and draped so that the lateral chest is exposed. The chest tube will be inserted into the fourth or fifth intercostal space, in the mid to anterior axillary line. Freezing is injected into the skin and into the periosteum of the rib at the bottom of the interspace, as well as the pleura. Next, a scalpel is used to create a transverse skin incision, just large enough to allow passage of the tube and one finger together. This incision is carried down through the subcutaneous fat. Next, a blunt Kelly clamp is used to divide the intercostal muscles, and then, very carefully and in a controlled fashion, to pop into the pleural cavity. As the neurovascular bundle runs on the inferior portion of the ribs, it is crucial that the tube is inserted on the superior border of the lower rib to avoid injury. Also, keep in mind that the heart, lungs, and diaphragm are often surprisingly close to where you are entering the chest and can all be injured during this step. Next, remove the Kelly and insert your finger, feeling in 360 degrees to ensure you are within the chest and that there are no adhesions of the lung to the chest wall. You should be able to feel a smooth surface on the inside of the ribs, which is the parietal pleura. If you cannot feel this, most likely you're not yet in the chest, and you therefore are not ready to insert the tube. You can usually also feel the diaphragm inferiorly, and possibly the lung medially, which give you another clue to your successful entry into the chest. When you're sure that you are truly in the chest, you are ready to insert the tube. Place the fenestrated end of the chest tube within a Kelly clamp, and use the clamp in your finger to guide the tube into the opening in the chest. Once inside, remove the clamp and use your finger to direct the tube towards the apex of the chest. Insert gently until you feel resistance. Check the markings on the tube to record the length of the tube inside the chest, and make sure the last fenestration is inside the chest cavity, or the tube will not function. Finally, suture the tube to the skin and connect it to an underwater seal device. Dispose of all your sharps in a safe manner. In this podcast, we have covered the definition, pathophysiology, causes, diagnosis, and treatment of a pneumothorax. Remember, a pneumothorax is the presence of air within the pleural space with the associated collapse of the lung. A pneumothorax can happen spontaneously, classically either in young, tall, thin males, or in patients with underlying lung disease. More commonly, a pneumothorax results from trauma or iatrogenic injury. In any case, the pneumothorax may be simple, without major impact on the patient's physiology, or a tension pneumothorax, which may result in respiratory distress, shock, and eventually death. A tension pneumothorax must be immediately recognized and treated with a needle decompression, and the ultimate treatment for all types of pneumothorax is a chest tube, inserted in the fourth or fifth intercostal space in the mid to anterior axillary line. Armed with a knowledge of the causes and presentation of pneumothoraces, as well as the ability to rapidly treat them, you will be ready to save the lives of patients with this common and dangerous condition.
That's it for another episode of Surgery 101. Please get in touch with us by touching the contact button at the bottom of the screen on your app. You can send us an email to surgerypodcast@gmail.com, send us a tweet to surgery_101, or join our Facebook group. We're always very keen to hear your comments and suggestions for future episodes, because the ideas that you give us make the best episodes. So please buy the app, please get in touch, please tell us what you think, please tell us what you want. And we'll see you right back here next week on Surgery 101.